So what would you say that you do? Like, what's your job? What is all this about, Lillian?
Well, so my name's Lillian, and in case Lillian. You don't know.
I'm Ryan. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
I am a mortgage advisor, and I have been as a mortgage advisor for over 2 years, almost 3 years.
Wow.
But prior to that, I worked at one of the major banks for 5 years. So jeez. I've been in the finance industry for, I would say, a few amount of time.
7 years is quite a while.
Yeah.
You got some inside scoop years. About the banks.
A little bit, things. Maybe.
What are they really doing? No,
they work hard, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, because you still need them to approve loans. So
exactly.
You wanna,
yeah.
So maybe people would be interested in who you are and where you're from. So where were you born? You're born here in Auckland. Where are you from?
I'm from Vietnam, so I'm Vietnamese. I was born in Vietnam.
Cool.
And I came to New Zealand in 2002.
2002?
Yeah, so it was over 20 years ago.
How old were you when you came?
12.
You're 32.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm 32.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, hang on. No, I'm 33.
No.
Okay. I can't do math.
Yeah, neither can I, apparently.
Yeah.
So, okay, what's Vietnam like? What did you go to a fancy school, or what was it like when you were in Vietnam before the age of 12?
I think my hometown's quite small, but it's about 2 hours away from the capital city, Hanoi.
Mm.
It's quite close to the coast side, so quite close to the beach. But funny thing, I could not swim. Even though I live the closest to the beach compared to, I guess, other part of Vietnam. But no, I can't get panicked in the water.
So when you're having a bath, you just freak the fuck out. You're just can't swim. Can't touch the bottom. Showered, no. So you just smell.
Yeah.
That's what I learned. Yeah,
that's it. Now, when the water gets to like my chest kind of thing, I start panic. And then I was just like, my head's all above water. But
is it the sharks underneath, or is it just because you can't swim?
I think it's just a fear of that I can't swim.
Wow. So even like a swimming pool, you're like, nah.
Yeah. Oh, swimming pool, I'll go the kids' side.
Everything's above your head.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
How did you face that fear? How do you get, like, let's give some swimming pool advice.
Yeah.
So you want to get in the swimming pool. You're going to venture out into the adult section.
Yeah.
And you're scared. what is your advice for people scared of water?
Relax is the advice that I've been given, or like my partners always say to me, you know, just relax and you float. Funny thing, I did actually take swimming lessons as an adult, maybe 5-6 years ago. So I would say that I can somewhat swim now, still not 100% confident about it, but I think I'll survive if I do get thrown in the water. Maybe.
Fingers crossed. Yeah. What do you learn as an adult swimming, and did you feel like an idiot? Did you have floaties?
I didn't.
You had floaties when you're learning? Wow.
No, they actually really chill about it because it's actually adult class. So it is quite a a safe zone kind of thing with the trainer or facilitator that's at the pool. It was really quite good. They go through like just a few techniques in terms of like how to relax in the water and, you know, your turning technique and stuff like that. And
can you do the roll?
No, I can't do the toe roll, but like, you know, when you turn your head.
Oh, okay. Oh,
freestyle when you turn your head. Yeah. Yeah.
What was something you were surprised about with swimming, like learning something? Because
that my body actually float.
That you actually float.
Yeah, my body actually float because I thought I'd just sink.
You thought you were broken. You're just a sinker. Heavy bones.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do they do, you know how like they train babies and they just chuck them in like as a surprise to see if they're ready? Do they do that with adults?
No, because we started off like...
Yeah, so I am curious. I'm a bit weird like that. I just like new things and how people do it. So they didn't do that, obviously.
No, they didn't do that. We just started off like in a pool that you feel comfortable with, which means that your feet can actually touch to the ground and things like that. And they kind of start off telling you on how to flow, get you to like stay in that flow position for a little bit. And they kind of like, not critique, but tell you what you're doing wrong or what can make it a bit easier in terms of having your head a little bit lower, because obviously your head I think is the heaviest. So if it's more in the water, your body tend to float a little bit more. But if you keep on kind of trying to lift your head up above water, then the rest of your body kind of just sink down. Yeah, it was interesting, but I learned a lot.
Yeah, it sounds like it. What are your top three tips for floating, non-floaters, for all the non-floaters listening now that think there's something wrong with them?
Honestly, like a starfish.
Starfish.
Yeah, that's it. That's how you, I guess that's how you would just float.
And keep your head up.
No, keep your head in the water. So like head the head kind of like just where your ear is, not below, like not that side of your ear. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I know what you mean, above water. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, because then when your head is above water, you kind of like your body just automatically sinks.
Is that what you're doing wrong?
I think so.
You're like too much head involved in that. Yeah. Too much. Your head was too far out of the water.
I guess so. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
That's good. So moving on from that. What's school like in Vietnam? Is it any different? Like, is it similar or?
Very different. I would say that the criteria there is a lot more difficult. There's a lot more homework at the, you know, after school. There's a lot more after school classes that required just for you to actually keep up to date with all the topics that is at school. So when I came over, my math or my timetable was the best in class. When I remember in intermediate, because I came in when I was intermediate, and we did like the teacher did a game, and then she would just read out random numbers from the timetable, and then you just kind of like stand next to the other student. So whoever that answered correct first, you get move on around the class. I was the one that moved around the whole class without like sitting down. So I guess the way or the maths or the other things topic that introduced at school is a lot early stages compared to New Zealand. Yeah.
So you'd already finished high school by the time you came here at 12. Like, because everyone's just like, they're late. No, so what is there any lessons around doing good at multiplication? 6 times 6.
36.
Oh, didn't even phase you. That's crazy. Yeah. Do you do like the fucking finger thing when it's like big ones? Like, do you have any like secret, like top tips for multiplication or maths?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, like, I guess when it comes to like double digits and things that you kind of multiply the easiest. So I, let's just say I always go by 10, because then, you know, 16, 60, and if it's 12, then it's like 60 plus 12, 72. Like you kind of break it up in your head kind of thing. And
okay,
I quite, and when it comes to numbers, I can actually imagine it. So like talking to you, I can actually see numbers on your side, and then I'm trying to do my maths there.
Wow. Do you see colours, or do you know how like you see the savants, you know, like these really talented math people, and they can remember 1,000 numbers?
Yeah.
Because it's a colour?
No. I think it just worked with numbers for me. Everything else is useless. Like,
okay, numbers.
Yeah, just numbers that I can play it like that. But other, yeah.
Interesting.
So I'm not sure.
Did you think we'd talk about your inability to swim and your a talent at math? Did you think that's where this was going to go? Because I didn't.
No.
Quite
a good topic, actually. I quite enjoyed that.
I mean, I did. I didn't know that the problem with, like, I've been able to float. I don't know. I'm not trying to show off or anything.
Yeah.
But I could swim before I could walk, and I never had a problem with floating. So I've never intellectualized the non-floaters as to why. Yeah. I thought it was because, you know, they weren't just so big heavy enough. I thought it's because the size, like, and like, because muscle is denser, so it's heavier, and then ratio to lungs,
because
that will help you float. And then I thought if you're fat, then you just float.
Yeah.
Because it's not as heavy.
Yeah.
But here you're telling this whole repertoire of keep your head, get your head in the water with the ears. We didn't quite work out exactly where the ears should be, but yeah. I think I understood it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay, Vietnam, what were your family, what did your parents do? Was it like, were you guys quite well off in Vietnam, or were you struggling, or was it chill? I don't even know. I've never been. I just heard that if you cross the street, don't stop, just go.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, good advice.
Exactly. Yeah, just go and don't run, because then they can't sort of go around you. So you just go at a steady pace.
Okay.
And then they will just go around you, because then there's a lot of motorbikes or scooters around Vietnam, so it's quite easy for them to, I guess, know where you are and then trying to go around you. So don't run, don't stop kind of thing, because it makes it harder for them to actually make their judgment call. My family, we're not well off, we're not rich or anything. I would say we're just very average. My auntie's been in New Zealand, I don't know, since 1990 or something. So
since you were born?
Yeah, or even before that, I actually can't remember. But anyway, she was the one that sponsored us over.
Sponsored, okay.
Yeah.
So you can be like, yo, like, should they pay for you? Or they say, this person's cool, let them in as a citizen? What do you mean sponsor? What does sponsor mean?
So you know how, like, when you do, I guess, migrant over... different countries will have different rules. Like from Vietnam, you definitely need someone to, as a, like a sponsor that's over here, like your family member. And sort of they go through the reason why my auntie wanted us over and not anyone else in the family. And I think she has to go through quite a bit of process. I'm not 100% sure. It is over 20 years ago.
You weren't even born?
Yeah, but
oh, no,
yeah.
12, yeah. No, you were born.
That's cool.
She came here in 1990, but you weren't born.
I'm pretty sure, or like 1980 something. She was one of the refugee. So she went. Mum kind of tell us this, our history, like, or like auntie's stories and things like that. So she went through as a boat, and then she got through to Hong Kong, and then from Hong Kong they kind of like distribute towards. I've got two aunties that's over here, and then got one uncle that got sent over to Canada.
What, so refugee from the war? Or what's a refugee? I don't know. So I'm like ignorant, and so are my listeners, some of them. A lot of them would be really smart. Yeah. But so there, she's a refugee, like as in there's drama and she left. Or what do you mean refugee?
Oh, is that how you... Is
yeah, refugee is like someone fleeing, I thought. Or not, so they're chill.
Maybe.
Is Vietnam okay? Like... Because it was fucked up for in the 70s, eh?
But then yeah, I think it was. I think during that time, it was quite difficult in terms of like employment and things. Because I think we just came out of the war or something.
Yeah. Okay, so you're not like, a history buff.
No,
okay.
No.
I won't ask. Just numbers.
Yeah, just numbers for me. Yeah, okay. But oh no, I think from memory is that she did leave Vietnam by boat. And then somehow got to Hong Kong and then got sent over. So I'm pretty sure... It's part of like refugee sort of category.
Wow, so she's illegal. She snuck on one of those boats.
And she becomes legal. So that's how she got us over.
yeah. That's what they do. They teach you in money laundering that you should, it's called cleaning the money. You go there to and it goes there and then ta-da.
Yeah.
Suspicious transaction report. Financial advisors listening. You gotta, if you see something suspicious, report it to the finance. They're called the police, financial service police or something.
Yeah.
It's not that. You're disagreeing. No. If it's not numbers, we can't talk about it.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
No, actually, I do know that there's a team in the bank that will actually keep an eye on it, on your transactions. Mm. So when it comes to that, just be careful.
Yeah, watch out.
Yeah.
Unless you're the drug cartel. Fund you. Like HSBC did. No, you probably shouldn't say.
Yeah, no.
There was a court hearing where they were found to. Anyways.
Yeah.
Moving on. So Vietnam, don't remember anything about the history, but you're good with numbers, don't like swimming, and you smoked everyone in that comp. what was it like coming here? Did you find it easy to fit in? Was making friends hard? Or you keep showing them they're stupid and then that they didn't want to be friends with you? Or what was...
I'm pretty nice, so I don't do that.
Okay.
No, I think it was okay for us to just fit in quite, I wouldn't say easily, because language definitely was a barrier there. I went to Papatoa Intermediate, so been living in South Auckland pretty much since I came to New Zealand.
So so you can throw the signs and stuff.
No, I actually don't know the signs, even though I look.
You probably shouldn't,
I'm pretty ignorant.
You just be nice to everyone, and then life looks after you.
Yeah, exactly.
You've cracked it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So what is your advice for people with language? You know, like, so they come here culturally different. They're not used to working till 7 on their homework, and you have chill homework, and you come here and they don't speak the same language as you. What has been quite helpful for you to like fit in? Like, you know how like some people make an English name because they people struggle to say their name and shit like
that's
that.
That's me.
Oh, that's you. Oh, what's your real name? My best friend's called Lily. Well, not your real name, but what's your name?
Hien. Yeah.
The inflection on your tonality tells me that it was wrong.
No, it's right.
Okay.
It's actually really close. Like, a lot of people do pronounce it quite interesting. But no, you did really well.
Okay, good. Yeah. Sounds a little condescending, but I'll take it. What's important? But what's your advice? Because, like, there's a certain shame around your culture in the sense if you're not owning the name that you're given.
No. I wouldn't say so. Or like maybe because my family is pretty relaxed about it, so then I don't really feel that. And then also I guess one way quite helpful too is be adaptable, because you do know that you realize, like, you'll have to realize that you are in a different country that's not in your hometown. You kind of, like, as long as you have open-minded and learn about the culture and accepting it or trying to embrace it, it makes life so much easier. Because then you, I guess, it doesn't put you in a position where, well, we don't do that at home, you know, where it's like, okay, maybe this way quite work. Or you can say, I've always been doing this way, which maybe a lot like helpful. Or if you find that your own way is more efficient, share it, because then again, people with different, like, with similar mindset, when you're open-minded, you learn new things and you actually improve your lifestyle, or I guess improve everything else. So yeah,
well, makes sense being open-minded. I mean, is there a challenge around identity? Because, you know, like, on one hand you're fitting in with everyone, but then, like, who are you in a sense, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't mean that, you know, being open-minded or fitting in doesn't mean that you lose who you are, though. That I said, you know, like, if you find, to say, I don't know, I can't think of an example, but if you say you do something, you've always been doing that same way, and all of a sudden you come into the picture and you say that, hey, why don't you do that? Because then for me, you know, normally the way how you do it, taking 10 minutes, but when you're starting to do your way, it's only 5 minutes. So, like, what have I done differently? You know, or what have you done differently? It doesn't mean that, you know, I'm really losing the way how I would do it, but can I adapt to that way? Or can we meet somewhere in the middle, you know?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because I was talking to a guy, young, and he gave himself, let's call it a white name.
Yeah.
An English name. I don't know. What's the politically correct way of saying it?
Yeah.
And he, in a lot of his life, he was talking about on the podcast that he had changed who he was to fit in, and had some sort of, because he was Māori and Chinese.
Oh.
And so he didn't really belong to either.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess you're just not being emotionally attached to it or anything. Like, you're not saying, this is who I am. You're just open. If it makes sense, it makes sense. Was there something that was surprising when you came here, like culturally, like you had to, you know, something was different?
Yeah, very different. It's the one thing that in Asia or in Vietnam, it's quite, I would say that at night we can easily go to a cafe or like hanging out with friends, and then at night where kids do, in a way, kids do play outside quite a lot more, I think.
So or like if I can, nothing to do after 7.
Exactly. To be honest, I wasn't going to say that, but since you said it, I'm going to agree with it.
Yeah, it is. I heard that, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not so much about, like, it doesn't really, once the shops are closed, then that's it. You know, you just be indoor. The weather was also another thing that, you know, it was very different. Like, summer here, it's not that hot.
Yeah.
But summer in Vietnam is
nuts.
Yeah, that's it. And to be honest, like, now I love the summer here. I do not like the summer in Vietnam at all.
You're assimilated. But winter sucks.
Yeah. Because
it would be real cold, wouldn't it? Yeah. Vietnam's just like...
Vietnam winter is actually... Oh, my hometown, it is really, really cold.
Oh.
It's here's just a lot of wind. You know, we just have... It's a very windy country for us. Vietnam is not so much wind, but it's cold. So you can actually feel it, even though you have layers and layers and your hand is still... Like, it's a bit harder to warm up, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like, it feels cold inside. I just realized we're talking about the weather, though. That's what I just realized.
Yeah. Yeah. But
is there something different about, like, what would people be surprised about to know about Vietnam? Like, that not a lot of people know, or like, tourists go there and they disrespect that. Like, Thailand, they stand up on tables and they point their feet towards the border, like, disrespectful. Or they might walk over money or something and not take into consideration the respect for the sovereign king over there.
Ah, interesting.
Just the artist travel.
Yeah, no, I didn't know that too. But I would say pretty much similar. There's certain things that, you know, we wouldn't... I mean, I wouldn't even do that here. So I don't know.
You wouldn't stand and dance on a table? You haven't lived, mate. You don't... That's an Australian thing, maybe. I don't know. There's lots of places where it's built in. The tables are like stainless steel, so you can deliberately dance on them.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway. Yeah, no. Okay, definitely that's not in Vietnam then.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, was there anything interesting, like unusual or different, or that like, how would you describe Vietnam in a way? You know, I didn't think we'd talk about this, but I don't meet many people from Vietnam.
Oh, don't you? Oh,
no.
Interesting. Okay, I'm a bit of a foodie. I would say food, because you know how, like, over here we do have, like, cafes, restaurants and things, and we don't have street stalls, whereas Vietnam is the norm. You know, that's how people make a living, is that you, as long as you have, I guess, if your house is facing, like, a front road sort of house, you could have just, like, put something out and start selling it.
Oh, like, no, like, food safety thing?
No. No.
Oh, so I'm going to get sicker. The food's incredible.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, and then that's also, like, people do charge on where to eat based on how busy they are or how many locals are actually going to that certain particular store or place as well. So if you see a lot of locals going to that place is definitely nice and cheap.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, there's no food safety. There's nothing. You need to apply with the council and say, hey, can I practice it? And stuff like that. So no. Yeah.
Well, I remember, and it's bad to draw similarities between Thailand and Vietnam because it's completely different. It's very culturally insensitive. But I would go to, like, these places and there'd be, like, rats running around and, like, and it would be in a market. But the food's incredible. And it's, like, all, like, well looked after and sanitary. And they put things in bags too. That's fucking weird to me. Do they do that in Vietnam too?
Yeah, they do.
I need to go away so I'm not culturally insensitive.
Yeah. I would say that, honestly, Vietnam... Well, so far, whoever that I've spoken to that's been to Vietnam, they absolutely love it. But it is definitely like a country where you can't see the whole country in just like a week or two because it's quite spread out and different city has their own different uniqueness or like something that they can offer. So the scenery is one. Food is also another one. Like north and south, the food taste is also quite different as well. South is a little bit more sweeter if you honour a bit of like a sweet, having a sweet tooth. Or north is a little bit more so savory or salty sort of thing. Yeah.
Why? What is the difference between the north and south? Like, or the different areas? Is it like the South Island and North Island a little bit different, but potato, potato. They might not like it. What, do you notice any area differences? Like, since the war, is it chill? Like, no one gives a fuck anymore? They're not fighting?
Yeah, they don't really fight anymore. But I think the very old traditional sort of family are probably still be like, oh, it's the north. Or like, oh, it's the south. You know, like that kind of thing. But I don't see that a lot anymore. They kind of very unite. And
okay.
Yeah.
And it's not that different? Like, where would you go in the different parts of Vietnam for certain things? Like, the south, you go for the beautiful scenery in New Zealand. The north, you might be because you want to engage with more people because it's a bit more... I don't know. Why would you go to the north? Rotorua smells good.
I'm from the north. I don't know. Vietnam, so like north scenery is also a little bit different to south scenery. South has a lot more French influence.
Oh.
So, like, especially, like, in the middle of Vietnam where Da Lat and that places are, the street names and things are still sort of some parts still in French or cathedrals and things like that because I think back in the war French kind of stay there,
colonized,
that's it,
stay there, just visited, popped over.
Yeah
Have you seen the tunnels,
the Kuchi tunnel in Ho Chi Minh?
Oh, is it just in Ho Chi Minh? I thought like all these tunnels were Viet Cong.
Yeah.
We're hiding in.
Yeah. So that's, I went through those tunnels myself, and honestly, even though I'm so little, I usually struggle to go through like certain part of the tunnel because it's so tiny.
That's insane.
Yeah. And it's actually, I should learn more about the history of my own country.
Yeah,
but,
it sounds like it.
But I actually learned so much after doing that Kuchi Tunnel tour in terms of, I guess, how their mindset or how they, how they trick the other party.
Oh, okay.
Like the way how they wear their shoes is backwards. So it looked like they're going that way, but in fact they're going forward, if that makes sense.
Yeah, tracking, yeah.
Yeah. I would say also like little traps and stuff like that, even though it's just handmade or man-made, it's just very smart the way how they... That's insane. Present it. So I was like, wow.
Can you imagine hiding in one of those tunnels?
Yeah, there's no way like a lot of people will be able to go through that. So then that's why like I think they did the tunnel that size on purpose. Yeah.
Oh, that's scary. So that the Americans wouldn't go on there.
Yeah, or like, bluntly, you won't be able to fit, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Asian-friendly tunnels.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
You're more politically correct than me. I don't give a fuck. For the last 20 minutes, probably people have hated me. Like, I'm asking the most ignorant shit, but that's how you get less ignorant. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. That's how you learn more. Be open-minded.
I'm open. Just like you said, I'm trying to understand the Vietnam culture from the lady that doesn't know much about it. The food's good. It's sweeter at this part.
Yeah.
Okay, so you come here. And then you've been to the bank, but what did you study at school? Like, did you do uni? Did you skip uni?
No, I did uni. I did Bachelor of Commerce, majoring in accounting and international business.
Jesus, what did you learn? Anything? I feel like...
To be honest, the accounting side, definitely the one that helping me a lot in this sort of, in just my current role at the moment, and just be able to understand or read the financial statements. And that's where I found that I can help, I guess, self-employed clients a little bit more, or be able to understand about their business or explain about their business quite in a bit more details when communicating with the bank. So definitely that's a plus to it. My goal behind like international business, because I wanted to travel and I wanted to do something that's, you know, globally. And I was thinking of maybe that job will get me in somewhere, you know, in something or into a role that will give me business trips, basically. Obviously, it didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, now you're stuck.
Yeah. I did, after I graduated, I did accounts receivable and accounts payable at a small firm for about a good 6 or 7 months. And at the same time, I was working at Countdown as a checkout manager. So.
Oh, manager. You got up there. I used to be a checkout operator. I never got to supervisor or manager. You're another level.
Yeah. Well, because I worked there for like, a number of years.
How soul destroying on a scale of 1 to 10?
Pardon?
How soul destroying is it on a scale of 1 to 10? Did you love it?
I enjoyed it.
Oh, okay. 6.5, huh?
Yeah. I enjoyed it. And I think that because then the manager sort of like, she actually really supportive as well. So I get all the overtime that I get. I pretty much always get what I wanted. You know.
Oh, okay.
In a way. And then,
teacher's pet.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're doing accounts receivable and Countdown manager because the manager was cool and you had special privileges.
Yeah. So we work 7 days a week during that. Yeah, 5 days at Countdown because obviously it's a manager role. It's Monday to Friday. Monday to Friday. But then I like the, sorry, my shift was Saturday to Thursday. Or not. Mm. Or Sunday to Saturday to... Doesn't matter. Anyway. Like 5 days. Seven days. Anyway. So today's accounts reasonable. But also that's where I realised that I cannot be stuck in an office looking at a computer 24/7 or 9 to 5, if that makes sense. So I was like, nope, accounting is definitely not for me. And so I left that second job, and I think after 6-7 months of working 7 days, I kind of that's it for me kind of thing. So I continue on with Countdown manager. I continue working at Countdown until was the end of in the same. So I was in the same role for like pretty much 5-7 years.
Jeez, you know a lot about Countdown, eh?
I was at Countdown 5 years, but funny thing on how I got into ASB. Was the manager of the local branch was shopping at Countdown. And I literally casually asked, do you have any role available? And he was like, bring your CV over. And so, brought my CV over. And that's how my journey started with the bank. Yeah.
People underplay that. Like if you're in a client-facing role and you do a good job, the amount of jobs you get offered is kind of crazy.
Yeah. And especially when, like, someone that know you or, like, talk to you or, like, see you often, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah.
Boom. So you talked about something interesting about self-employed people and you have a unique way of helping them. What should, like, self-employed people think about when they're wanting to get the mortgage and things like that to help with approvals?
Definitely for being self-employed, I guess with the banks is that they see there's a little bit higher risk in terms of, like, your the consistency of your income. So then basically you just need to prove to the bank that your income is consistent. You have these different types, I guess different types of self-employed, where you sign certain contract with this guaranteed income that's coming through, or that you have a really good clientele that you have proven histories of consistent income. Yeah, of your business. Normally the bank do look at the average of the last 2 years, but if you're new, and as long as you have the solid 12 months of financials, it's possible as well. Yeah.
What should people do in preparation for like a mortgage? So I've heard of like this legislation, triple CFA, and you know, these advisors like using these acronyms, you know, what the hell? But it's like, you know, what can people, they want to buy a house and they're self-employed, let's say, because this is quite a unique offering. Not many people help self-employed people. And they want to prepare to make sure everything's going to get an approval. Like what steps should they go through to help with approvals or to think about?
Financial statements. Your financial statements talked a lot about your business. So yeah, and then also one thing that you do need to remember too is that when you're talking to your accountant or having a plan of your business financials or preparing your business financials, be quite clear to them in terms of your goal. Because then the thing is, your accountant automatically sort of, this is my own opinion, by the way, accountant sort of automatically put into a mindset of, okay, how will I be able to save my client tax, income tax, or to paying income tax, right? Because then that means that there will be more money that's in your pocket. Paying less income tax, meaning that you'll be declaring less profit, more expenses. Now, when it comes to buying a house, the bank looks the opposite. So they don't look at it in terms of like, you know, your whatever the revenue that you've generated, they look at your net profit. So the higher the net profit that you declare, the higher the lending amount that you will be able to get. But that also means that you'll pay more tax. So that's why I guess depending on which stage that you are in your business or what is your goal would be for that particular point in time, remember the bank look back in the last two financial years. So if you want to be really well prepared for it, then having a consistent income over the last two financial year. So let's just say, no, like last year you make 50K as a net profit and all of this year is like 100K. You need to give me a good explanation of why there's a double jump.
Interesting. So even though I'm doing really good,
yeah,
it's not good.
It's like doing really good. Is it a one-off that you're doing really good? Or is it going to continue to grow? What have you done differently compared to the year before that helped you double your revenue? And then again, you know, it could be sometimes like it could be because of the market. Because then obviously some businesses doesn't do quite well during COVID because of all the lockdown and everything. And then COVID is over and then you get back to your business and therefore you're tracking double that. That's absolutely fine. But let's just say on a normal position, and if you haven't done any change to your business at all and all of a sudden you're making double, then what? Something has to happen. Like basically something has to go on in your business. Either you got new contract, like more work, or you've hired, you know, an employee, that's why you will be able, like you're able to double or even triple the workload that you come in. So, yeah,
Are there reasons they don't accept? So let's say, you know, I get 50 grand, next year I get 200,000 and I say, oh, just because, you know, lucky dip. Like, you know, won lotto. what are reasons they accept and reasons they don't, you know?
I guess anything that's related to your business and not be something, we're not lotto. Yeah, it's very out of context, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, like, I'm buying tickets all the time with my business.
But then that'll be a one-off income. It's not a consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So then the question that they always ask is like, will you be able to make the same level of income the following financial year or the next few years? Or like, you know, what is the likelihood of your business not making enough to actually cover the debt? Because remember, the bank always look at your affordability and also they're looking at suitability of the products as well. So like, is home loan product actually suitable to you if your income is being so inconsistent?
Yeah. Interesting. So with these self-employed people, we're just going to stay on it for a little bit. Because I mean, it's called NZ Business Owners. So.
Yeah.
So Is there other things that are important when thinking about it? Like, do they ever look at systems or processes or the fact that it's reliant on the founder or that they don't have insurance and things like that? Or is it purely just suitability and affordability?
Yeah. So it's, yeah, pretty much that was like the main thing that they look at. Another thing that they do look at. So basically before, when I talk to my client, I do tell them that before they give any approval or anything, there are two main criteria that the bank look at. First of all, is your deposit, whether it's 5%, 10%, 15 or 20 or anywhere in between. So they know in terms of like how much you're putting towards this purchase. Obviously, the higher amount that you're putting towards the purchase, it means that you are more committed to the actual that investment, regardless whether you're buying your first home or property or like in investment property, it's still an investment, right? Because imagine you work so hard and you saved up this amount of money and you're putting the whole thing in this particular asset. You want to make sure it's actually working for you. So your deposit level will determine in terms of like the bank's risk level. So lower the bank's risk, the better it'll be. It's easier for them to approve the loan. And secondly, it's even your affordability. Can you afford the mortgage? And remember, having a mortgage is a long-term commitment because then the loan is done over 30 years. And saying that, I don't think anyone in New Zealand actually had a mortgage for the same property for over the last 30 years. Because things change, people do upgrades, people do downgrades, people do sell and buy, or, you know, getting more property. So I think, from memory, average is about 6 or 7 years on a mortgage that you get, like the bank will retain, in particular bank will retain.
And then they drop off.
Yeah, because it could be that, let's just say, after you've been on your bank for 6, 7 years, and then you came back to them and you say that, hey, I want to top up to buy a car, your financial position has changed at that point, it no longer be the same as back then, or that the criteria has changed and they turn around and say, sorry, we can't help because you've already at your max lending. I'm just going to go over to the neighbor bank and see if I can, you know. How like average home loan in New Zealand per bank, or each bank retainers, I think on average is like 6, 7. I mean, I may be wrong, so don't quote me on that.
Interesting retention. What are you seeing in the market? So like a lot of what I'm hearing is that there's a bit of a recession and there's fears around people have got these mortgages from way back when at a low rate and this new rate's come in and they're about to refix it. And they might not be able to afford it. Like, what are you seeing with potential clients and existing clients in the state of the market? Like, is it really good to buy a property now? Is it really not many people are buying it? Are people struggling? What are you coming across in what you do?
At this current or at this moment, the market definitely has picked up.
Okay.
Because the interest rate pretty much has been high for some time now. So if you look at all the interest rate cycle, it go between 18 months to 24 months sort of thing. Okay. So when it goes real low again, you know, at the beginning of 2020, that when COVID hit, and that's when interest rates starting to drop until the end of 2021, which is roughly about 2 years, that's when, you know, when it goes like real low. And then beginning of the 2021, that's when the interest rate starting to increase. And you can see that it kind of plateaued a little bit over the past few months now. So it kind of, in a way, you know, we kind of feel like it is at its kind of peak. And then eventually it will starting to come down. Obviously, we don't know when exactly, but it will come down soon. And in fact, that you can already see some, I guess, some of the long-term rates has actually dropped a little bit already as well. So when the bank is shopping long-term rates, it's kind of an indication that the rate are coming down. So they're wanting people to lock in for a bit longer. So then that way they, you know, it's higher rate. When the rate do come down, then the profit margin is a little bit higher. So, yeah, I guess like in terms of that's the current market, people are going starting to come back in terms like buy or there's more activities in the market. People starting to understand their cash flow as well. And slowly it gets to the point it may turn out to be a fear missing out too, is that they think it is already at the bottom of the market. And if the rate's starting to drop, the price is going to go up. So then, you know, get in now rather than getting in later. When you're buying property though, regard, like especially when you're buying your own home, you're not buying a whole market. So to be honest, any time is a good time to buy.
Oh, yeah, like it's true. It's true though. Like same with investment. It's just whenever you want to do your thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not going to know when the future is and how
yeah,
it works.
Yeah. It is way too hard to try to time the market or like ask the question of like, is this really a good time to buy? You make the decision based on the best, you know, based on all the information at the point of time and whether you can afford it at that point of time. As long as you, especially with housing or property investment, you, as long as you're in it for a long term, it will, the market will correct itself and the property value will increase. So say, for example, I bought my first home back in 2017.
Your first home?
Yes.
Oh, this working at Countdown is quite profitable, isn't it?
No, I was already working at ASB at that point.
Oh, okay, you're balling then. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I bought my first home in 2017. And
that's crazy.
It was a difficult journey and I did actually had to save, like I had a really small deposit.
How many houses do you have now?
One.
Oh, my first house. Okay. My only house. Okay.
My only house. Yeah. Okay. So, fair enough. No, yeah, I was the same as any other first home buyers. Like, my deposit was very low. I literally have like 10% deposit. Mm. And at that point, it took me over 6 months to actually find it was a property that I like and also within the price range or within my budget, because then obviously there's other property that I like, but it's way outside my budget. And saying that though, there's no, like I bought that, it's a 3-bedroom house, freehold on a 600 square meter section, standalone. So it was, to me, it was a good buy. And then if you think about last year when the dip in the market was, like the lowest market, there's no way you can get that same house for that same value, which is 550k, even when there's a dip compared to like 2017. So again, my point is that the value, even though there's a drop in the value, but yet when you compare it 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, it is still an increase. Because the market, the property market is a cycle, right? So it goes up and down. But if you look over, I guess, over a certain, a long-term period of time, it goes up and down, but it goes that way. It doesn't go that way.
What do you say when people say it's a bubble? Because, you know, like you go to Detroit, for example, buy a house for a buck. So like New Zealand, I get it. It's done incredibly well. Property grows. There's a lack of supply and there's big demand because I don't know how. We can't build houses, whatever. And then it keeps going up. But then, you know, maybe there's a mining town in Australia where everyone went there for the mine. They leave, house is worthless. You know what I mean? Like, it's, I don't know if you could always say it always goes up, but it definitely has done that so far.
Yeah.
So what would you say when someone's like, New Zealand property market's a bubble? What would you say? You can disagree too, I don't know.
I think, yeah, no, I definitely disagree with that because it also depends on the demand, right? It's go back down to supply and demand curve. You know, if there's more demand and less supply, obviously the value that will drive the value up. But if there's more supply and less demand, then of course it'll drive it down. But then again, how low the level of demand in New Zealand would have to be for it to
stop.
Yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Why do you think there's not enough houses? What went wrong? Let's get political. Who fucked up? Now, do you know anything about that? I don't, you just know the numbers and
yeah, getting exactly. Mortgages. I just know the numbers. No, I do find in terms, I think they're just more people than houses.
That's deep. Okay. Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. Technically correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow, that's beautiful. So... So what else, like, because I don't really get the whole, I don't know if I'll buy a house unless my future wife makes me buy it, because I don't like debt, and I think the most valuable assets are the business, and then eventually having property is useful because it's a lifestyle, it's beautiful, I can get a dog, you know, I don't have to worry about the landlord's going to turf me out. I see the benefit.
Yeah.
And
yet you still wouldn't buy one.
No, it's just dead money. Like, I renting... My expenses are $250. Everything. Everyone's like, oh, but that's going to nothing. I'm like, well, how much are rates? And yeah. I get to live with whoever I want. Like, I head tenant, I live with 6 people because I want to, because I like community and humans, and I think we should be like a tribe. And I just, like, I treat it like a business too. I'm like, I'm going to fucking talk to 80 people to find one amazing person to live with, and then we all live together, and it's cool. And it costs me $250. and I have no debt, I have no fears, I have no stress.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what I mean?
Yep, no, 100%. And so in another 5 or 10 years, that $250 will still be $250.
It will go up for sure. It'll be expensive. So how much, let's say, $200 a year, 10 grand. Let's say it's 20 grand a year. Is that quick math? Because if you do 20, it's about 10.
Yeah.
It's 10,400. You should be making this in your head. So I'm paying $10,400 a year.
Yeah.
And then you got maintenance on the house. That's a certain cost.
Yeah.
And then you've got rates. That's a certain cost.
Mm-hmm.
You still have to pay water.
Yep.
Certain cost.
Yep.
Power. I don't pay power because it's a collective of everyone.
Yeah.
I'm saving money.
I guess in your position, when you put it that way.
Like, how much is power for a house? Ours is stupid because it's a big old house with people and it's like $600 a month.
Oh, I think mine is average about $300 a month. And that is my family, five people in the house.
So what's that, like, $3,600?
In a year? Yeah. 3,600 in a year.
Dead money. I'm not paying that.
Yep, you're not paying that.
And then rates, how much does rates a year? Like $3,000?
Yep, or depend. I guess it probably by property. But yeah, let's just say $3,000 a year.
$6,600, dead money. What else do you pay?
Hang on a minute. Hang on a minute. Let's go back to this one. You say you're not paying power because it's kind of shared between whoever that you're living with.
Correct. I pay $25 a week.
What is stopping you if it's your own home and you're putting the same position that you are now?
I'll get flatmates.
Exactly.
Okay, valid. I'll get a 6-bedroom house and get flatmates.
Yep.
And then I'm making money.
Exactly.
That's a good pushback. I'll take that.
Yep.
Other than that, dead money.
No, it's not. Like,
what are you going to do with it? It's in the house.
So in, say, in 5 years' time, or 5 years or 10 years' time, and you decided, say, hey, I want to travel the world.
Yeah. I just leave.
You just leave.
Because I don't own a house.
Yep, you don't own a house. But if you own a house, you can rent it out, and that will become your passive income. So you can travel and still earning income without doing any work.
Or, because that's not passive. Let's put like it's not. It's income. It's not passive. Okay. I don't know if you've ever had tenants like trying to fucking. Oh, you gonna pay your bills this week? Yeah, next week. Oh, but I can't kick you out because
that's
new
because you're trying to be a landlord.
Yeah.
The trick is don't try to be a landlord and get a property manager to look after that for you.
Now I'm losing money.
No.
What am I making? 2%.
You know, well, the thing is that depending on your mortgage position at that point, right? And say that you're paying rent. Technically, what I'm saying is that you're paying someone else's mortgage. You're actually adding that money into someone else's pocket. You are helping them to get mortgage-free property and then they get income out of your money. But then for you, let's just say by then, if you're mortgage-free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, let's do that. Let's add the mortgage in because that's dead money too. So we've
I disagree.
Interest is, I'm not claiming that. You can't claim it anymore. So let's.
Or you don't know that. The new government has come in.
That's true. National could change it.
Yep.
National
and
Labor.
I think they have already changing it. I think starting from 2025, you can claim back again 100%.
Oh, well, that makes sense. Like,
correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah. I will. Yeah.
So now it's taxable, so we can't count it because then it's not dead money. No, but is it taxable for your house?
Well, when you rented it out and it'll come down.
When you rent it out.
Yeah. Nah. And it also, it all depends on, I guess, who owns the house too, right? Like, are you going to put it under your own name or are you going to put it under a trust or company? Honestly, your accountant and your lawyer will be your best friend.
Sounds like it. Okay, let's do the math though. So let's say on average the interest rate's probably 7% on average over 10, 20 years. But we can say 5 if you like. You pick a number.
So I actually just had a webinar that I attended yesterday. And then the bank all the bank collectively do an average interest rate on all of the mortgage holders at the moment in terms of where they are at, average. That's including people that's on the lower rate that's still waiting to come off fixed or the one that's already fixed at the current rate. Mm-hmm. It is sitting at between a 5 to 6%.
Okay, so we'll do 5.
So we can do 5,
So we've got $1 million loan.
Yeah.
Paying 5% on that.
Yeah.
What's that? $50K a year.
Yeah.
Dead money. Goes nowhere. You know what I mean? I'm paying $10,000 that, you know, then I've got these power things and blah, blah. And it's almost breaking even just on that. Almost.
Yeah. But you're only
looking. And then I've got $50,000 debt. So I'm making $40,000 every year until you catch up and pay off your mortgage. But I'm getting an income of $40,000.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Yeah.
If you think about it.
But remember, as your rent goes increase, yeah, your rental CPI? Income will also increase.
By 3%?
Yeah, which is by 3%. And as you're paying off your mortgage, it goes down. So the interest cost will go down, whereas your rent expense will continue to increase.
That's true. So let's work it out. Yeah. So over 20 years.
I'm hearing a lot of that's true from you.
let's say, so you're it averages out about 20 grand a year over a 20 year period. I don't know how you'd work that out, but like if, so it starts off at 40 grand because yep. it's 5% and yep, then just like it that. Decreases. So probably over a 20 year period, maybe we don't know how to work this out. If you do, then you're amazing. Let's maybe it's 15 grand or a year.
Yeah.
Of dead money. So, or maybe 20 so I can do the math. So that's $400,000 I've paid over 20 years. And I just got to make sure my 3% increase each year in line with the CPI or yep. whatever
yep.
doesn't exceed that. I think I'll be okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If you use the rule of 72, have you heard of the rule of 72?
I think so.
If you divide 72 by a return or the inflation, that's how long it'll take for your money to double or halve.
Yeah.
So if we're using the 3% rule to work out how long it'll take for my rent to double, it'll be 72 divided by 3. You're good at maths. What's this? So it goes in 2 and then 1, 4, 14.
Yeah.
Is it?
72.
That 16. Doesn't sound right.
No, that doesn't sound right.
24?
24.
Yeah, 24 yeah, sounds
24.
Right. Yeah, 24. So 24 years,
yeah.
I'll be paying 20 grand rent. So I win.
No, no. I still disagree because you also haven't looked into the possibility of you selling that house at a gain, buy something that's a little bit cheaper and be mortgage free in like 5 or 10 years time. You're looking at over 20 years.
I'll meet you halfway.
Sure.
If I buy investment property and leverage that asset that I've accumulated,
yeah.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
If I'm buying into the same market, probably it's going to be relative or I might pay more for a nicer house or I might sell my Auckland house and go to Gore. Okay. Yeah, fair enough. Or if I'm just saving that 40 grand every year that I'm losing into a managed fund.
Yeah.
Getting, you know, let's say 4%, 5% a year.
Yeah.
That compounds. So let's say, I can't do the math on that.
The question is, will you save that 40K though? Or are you going to spend it?
Yeah, well, I'm disciplined. I'm not like all these mortgage holders that need conscriptive saving. I get it though. Like, I just think fundamentally buying a house is a lifestyle choice.
Yeah.
Buying an investment property is incredible if it's managed well and you're making money on money you don't have.
Yeah.
Other than that, let me rent, don't judge me. You know what I mean?
I'm not judging you. I'm just saying. I was just trying to change your mind. I was just trying to change your mindset.
You're not open-minded anymore. You're changed ever since you moved here when you were 12. Just, anyways, any last thoughts? Because we've done an hour.
Oh, have we? Yeah. That's long. that's fast.
Oh, yeah, long.
I mean, that's fast. That's tough. Fast. Yeah.
Now, what would be your advice to first-time buyers that are like, worried, they don't know how it works? What should they do as your closing remarks for this podcast?
Yeah. It's like if you feel like you don't know what to do or where to start, talk to a mortgage broker. Because then obviously you are not in the field. They in the field, so they understand the ins and outs, what the banks require. Because then the thing is like, unless you have the cash to buy the house outright, you will rely on the bank to actually giving you the money to actually purchase your home or help achieving that goal. So talk to someone that understand what they want, what they're after, and also be able to guide you through the process. Or if you're not ready, they can also draw, I guess, in a plan. So then you can save or you can work towards it. So yeah, to actually meet that dream.
And it costs nothing.
It doesn't cost it. That's it.
So talk to them, fucking waste their time, who cares? I'll see you in 6 months.
Yeah, exactly.
The patience. It takes a lot of patience.
It does. But then to be like I don't know about others, but like for me, I don't know if you can tell already, I'm really passionate about homeowners or like helping people getting into their home ownership. So I'll rather giving you the guidance or giving you the knowledge that you need, regardless of you will be buying a house now or 6 months, Sam, or next year.
Head her up.
Exactly. Well, one day you'll be in a position where you are like you said, at least my future wife want you to buy.
Yeah, they'll hurt you. I'll be like, yo, exactly. She made me. Yeah. How do I put this 400,000 of dead money with you?
Exactly. See? Perfect. So like, you know, one way, I mean, sooner or later,
yeah,
you would be in a position that you want to.
True. And because you've treated me with courtesy and respect, despite my political incorrectness, I'll be like, you know who I call?
Yeah.
Lillian.
Hopefully. Don't forget the name.
Yeah, lock it in.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks for doing the podcast.
Well, no, thank you for having me.
That's right. You're done.
Is that it?
Yeah. Your escape.